Guys, we're going to get started in a few minutes here. Sorry for the delay. As you all know, technology is wonderful, but technology is also interesting. Anyway, good afternoon to everybody. My name is Louis Herrera, and I am the technology chairperson. And we have our program agenda today, along with Tricia Leitz, who is the chairperson for the rehab committee. You're going to be treated to a two presentations, one on the Zoomix magnification product and screen reading, and we're going to learn a little bit about DAISY format and DAISY technology. And after that, we're going to be spending some time, or the last hour, dedicated to advocacy. And Jesse Laurent from San Francisco is going to talk to us about, you know, the pitfalls and how to go about advocating for yourself, basically. In addition, you guys, after this presentation, remember that there's going to be another seminar in this room. What is the title of the group, Bernice? California Council of Citizens with Low Vision. I know CCLV, and I always mess it up, so I figured I'd ask her to clarify. Anyway, the speaker that's going to be here is Dr. Takeshita, who is from the Center for the Partially Sighted. Very brilliant person. In addition, there'll be an one of his colleagues here to talk about assistive technology for low vision. That is okay. Anyway, I also want to mention to you guys that Microsoft has published and is making available accessibility CD package, two CDs on accessibility tools and documents on how to go about using certain products that Microsoft produces. And they're not available. I have about 40 of them with me. So if you are interested, see Marie in the back. She's got a box and she'll give you one. Please take one per person. If there's any extras and somebody else wants them after somebody else gets them, you can go ahead and request them. But for now, take one at a one per person so we can try and get as many people a chance to take one of those things. They are interesting. I've gone through it. I found a couple of useful drivers, but in typical Microsoft fashion, they're kind of they're a real piece of work to navigate. Okay? Anyway, so let me talk. Well, we have to, at this hour, for the 1 o'clock hour, A.T. Crater, Andy from A.T. Crater, and his assistants are going to be demonstrating the ZoomX product. I've heard of ZoomX, I read about ZoomX, and I'm anxious to learn about it. So I'm going to turn the microphone over to Andy from AT Crater and have him introduce what they're going to be demonstrating. And if they are ready to go, I guess we'll turn it over to them. Andy?
Thank you, Louis. I've got another microphone here. Mark, let me give this to you. Okay. I hope everybody here has a sense of humor. Because I really need to maintain mine today. Murphy's Law is kicked in for us today, and unfortunately, the good news is you will see ZoomX work and what you came here to see. Not quite in the way we had planned it, but we're going to give it a try. This has been a hectic week for everybody, and
okay, Lane,
I guess before I start, we should just take a moment to make sure we all get our thoughts and prayers out there for anybody and everybody who's been affected by the fires this week. I know I don't live anywhere near the fires, but breathing in the smoke that's been blowing over my house has made it an uncomfortable week at that. Lena Resnick, the owner of ABIC, the manufacturer of the ZoomX and ZoomTwix product, was scheduled to be here today to make a personal presentation on a brand new version of ZoomX. I believe it's 2.9, Mark. Is that right? I'm here with Mark Schaefer, by the way, who many of you know.
Hello, folks. Frazzled as usual, but we're there.
Unfortunately, due to fire issues and the closing of Cal State San Bernardino, where her appointment yesterday was supposed to be, and then watching the TV and seeing close to 500,000 people supposedly evacuated, she thought she made the wise choice in not going anywhere near California, and it's hard to blame anybody for not wanting to be here right now. Well, in the process, Mark and I were attending another conference and at the same time got some new software that we never had a chance to use with ZoomX. And we decided to do a Skype over the internet presentation. So the next thing that happened, because Lena is now sitting in her office in Massachusetts waiting to talk to us, but we've been unable to get internet running in this room. So Murphy's Law has really kicked in. So what we're going to try to do, and please tell us if you're having difficulty hearing, is we're actually going to stand here and hold a cell phone with a speaker up to a microphone. We did a quick test run about 20 minutes ago, and well, we're going to give it a try. We have ZoomX set up here. We'll be able to show it to you. We will have it at the exhibit tables the next 2 days, and anything that doesn't get done that we were hoping to get done today will get done over the next 2 days. But we want to give this a try the way we were hoping to do it. So I'm going to turn this over to Lena Resnick right now, and wish us all good luck.
hello, do you hear me, guys?
Can everybody hear you?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah. Okay, great. Hello, and first I would like to apologize that I'm not there physically, but what can I say? I will try to do my best and explain to you everything about what we have and what we are going to have. So I am representing the company ABIC. And we are in Massachusetts, and so 3,000 miles away from you. At first, I would like to explain why we named the company in this way. I don't think that it was the smartest decision we have ever made, but what we thought about was, like, you look at the alphabet and say A, B, and finally I, C. So maybe after this you will be able to remember this really strange name. Okay, we were incorporated 2 years ago, in January 2006, but the development started maybe 2 years before this. And our company is still relatively small, but we are growing pretty fast. So we concentrate 100% on low vision and blind devices. And currently we have two devices. The first one is ZoomX. And ZoomX is a scanner, reader, and magnifier, like all in one. Our second device is ZoomTwix. And ZoomTwix will do everything what ZoomX will do for you, plus it has a second camera. And the second camera is like regular CCTV, which will allow you to look at the whiteboard, and to the desk to see like color pictures or to write under the camera. ZoomX is certainly our first and best-selling device, and I think it is used much more than ZoomTwix. So I will start with ZoomX. So how you start with using ZoomX? When you buy this product, you get a piece of hardware, the device itself, and it goes with a CD which has software on it. You install software on any IBM-compatible laptop or PC and unfold the device, plug it to your computer, start the application, and you are ready to work. Because I am here to impress you with what I am doing, and unfortunately you cannot even try to touch one. Maybe, by the way, Andy, can you give people the devices that they can touch it while I'm talking?
We just put a ZoomX camera in Louis Herrera's hands, and they're beginning to pass it around now.
Okay, great. So you will be able, everybody will be able to see how the to feel how the device looks like and how to touch it. Okay. So what I will do now? I prepared a lot of books here to demonstrate to you how ZoomX will scan and read these books. I want to start with the first one, which is a paperback book which is one of this New York's bestsellers, Catherine Stone, the name of the book is Illusions. This is, the thickness of this book is a little bit more than 1 inch, and it has 435 pages. So what I will do now, I just start the application, and I am doing everything in real time. So I am clicking now, maybe you even heard the click on the application. So the first thing you heard was camera started. This means that our camera started to work, and now it is already for those of customers who can see something on the screen, the image of what is under the camera will appear on the screen. I put this book under the camera now, and to start reading, the only thing which I have to do is to click one key. And this is exactly what I will do now. Again, you will hear, at this point, I will try to make sure that you hear not me, but the computer. Okay? So I am clicking the key.
Camera stopped.
So the first thing you heard, camera stopped. It means that this book, these two pages of this book have already been captured.
266 Catherine Stone, the sounds of music from his study didn't travel upstairs. She hadn't been awakened by sounds, but something had awakened her.
I click now the post key. So you notice that it took just a few seconds to start reading these two pages. Do you hear me?
We're doing fine.
You're doing fine, and you have computer very well. Uh-huh.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Okay, great. So you, but what I would like to do next, we have one more feature. Our software will describe this page for you, because I told you that I took this book, I put it under the camera, how much text is there, what kind of page is it, you don't know. So I click another key, and...
Six sections, 651 words, 39% text.
Okay, now I will explain to you what you heard now. So I asked the software to analyze this page. So what you heard, that under the camera now, there are 650 plus words. And the amount of text on this page is 39%. Or I think it said 39%. Now let me explain to you what it means. Let me now to describe the device itself. Zoomix is a portable device in all possible respects. It folds like a tripod. So when you get the device, like we sell it with a small bag, you take the device out of the bag, it is all folded, and the size of it will be like 7 inches long and 3-4 inches wide. So you open the legs, two legs, which will become the stand for this device. And this legs will stay on your desk, and they will serve as like as a guidance guide for you to line a book or a document. The size of this legs is exactly like 8.5 inches by 11 inches. So it is the standard letter size. And whatever is between these two legs will be captured, like photographed immediately. So when you heard these words, camera started, this is exactly what happened. The camera just captured the whole, everything which is under it. Size 8.5 by 11. So when you heard from this, when it analyzed the page, that 39% of this page is text, it means that the size of this book was really like maybe half of this page. It is really a paperback, small paperback New York bestseller, what you are reading, what we are reading now. And on this small page size, what you have this, I opened this book, so what we photographed was two pages at a time. And on these two pages, there were 650 plus words. So you can Imagine now what kind of print is there. It is not the fine print, but it is pretty small print. And for this small print, it started to read like what you heard, pretty fast. A few more words about this device. When you unfold it, you have these two legs which will stand on your desk. Another one is a vertical one which has a camera attached to it. So camera is always at the exact distance needed to create a clear image. So you don't have to worry about where you put your document, how you put your document. You always know where it is. By the way, among our users, there are a lot of children. And so what we have done, we understand that it is very easy to align the document with this device. But because for kids, even this could be difficult, even if you put the book with the angle to this legs, and this angle is less than 45 degrees, it is still fine. We will straighten the lines, and this whatever will be on the screen and what will be read, it still be the right text. The weight of the device is only 1 pound. So it is really 1 pound. It is not like people very often will say 1 pound, and it is really 1.9. It is really 1.0. So everybody can carry it anywhere. Now, let me, what I have done with this now, when I stopped it, I click the key which will just pause the reading. So what I will do now, I will continue where we stopped. And I would like you to just listen for a minute and see how good or bad our OCR is working. And again, it is not my goal today to demonstrate to you that we can do anything and everything. I will specifically speak about what we can do and what we cannot do. Because this is a new technology and...
What happened? Just a minute, guys. We've got a small technical thing here. Okay, well, plan C we're up to, and if we get to D, we're done. Okay, she's talking about the ZoomX. By the way, we have a wonderful piece of technology here. This is the ZoomX ZoomTwix system, and what we're going to do is we're going to do a little bit of demonstration here on how this product works. Now, you folks in the room here, you probably all have used some sort of scanning technology before in the past. Okay, I have two, and one of the things that I don't like about scanning technology is the time involved. It takes a long time. Now, I could ask Andy to imitate a scanner, but we all know how long it takes. It takes between 30 and 45 seconds generally to scan a document. All right, in this system, how would you folks feel if we got it down to 10 seconds per each page? Would that interest you? Oh, it would interest me. Andy, can we do better than that?
I hope so.
I think we can. I think we can do a lot better than that. So let's go ahead. You folks have already seen the camera system. It's a small portable system that you can hook up to a laptop. Or you can hook it up to a desktop computer. Any computer with a USB 2.0 port. We can hook this system up and we're ready to go. This is really neat because now you can take it into the library. You can take it anywhere that you need to scan. You're ready to roll. All right, well, you guys have heard me enough, or maybe you haven't heard enough of me. Let's get this system going. I hope we got audio on the computer.
How do we test that? Let's run it and see what we got.
Right,
I've got a document under the ZoomX camera. The ZoomX camera should be a secondary one being passed around. Okay. So what you've got in your hands is something that weighs 1 pound. It folds up and connects to your computer via one USB port. I'm just curious, were you, as generally speaking, able to understand Lena and get much of what she said? Boy, that's the best thing that's happened to me today so far. He actually understood her. I'm going to see if I have audio here. What I'm going to do, I have a document that I printed out. Louis sent me an email telling me where we were going to be today. So I printed it out. It's under the camera, and I'm going to push. I'm going to tell you when I push the button, and then let you all see how long it takes to start reading. Okay, I'm going to count to three and push the button. One, two, three.
Camera stopped. Technology and rehabilitation session location Andy Kratter from Lewis Henry I Herderag Point Net sent Friday.
I'm going to stop it. Need I go further? That was less than 2 seconds in my book.
Just so you know that we're not fooling, here's another document. Do you want to try this? Let's just try this brochure here. We're going to throw it right under.
This is a glossy brochure. I'm going to go with the... You have the option of turning LED lights on the camera on or off. And I'm going to leave them off right now. I'm going to...
Hit the space bar to start the camera.
Camera started.
Okay, I just hit the space bar, and I'm going to turn the lights off. And Lena's trying to call
light
me back
off
on my cell phone, which doesn't have an adequate speaker in it, so I'm just going to let that ring. She's probably freaking out in Boston, which is okay with me. If it rubs off on the Red Sox to lose, I will...
Somehow sports got into it.
I will credit Lena for that one. Okay, I'm gonna touch the E again and see. Let's try it again. This is a glossy brochure of the Zoom Twix camera. It's got multiple styles of fonts on it. Large bold text, reverse contrast text. It's got graphics on it. It's got little arrows on it as bullets. And it's got small text. So this is more of a challenge. I'm going to push E, and I'm going to get my phone and tell Lena we're doing fine without her. Or at least we're trying.
Camera stopped. LLIEIELLINI. The smallest scanner, fastest reader available. Video camera, an all-purpose autofocus optical zoom color camera for 360 viewing at any distance. Still camera, a high-resolution digital camera that takes a snapshot of text for easy on-screen reading at up to 40x magnification with speech.
I just pushed the X button, which is your stop reading button. It's quick, it's fast. The camera has, besides the ability to just read speech, there are significant low vision options in this, and I don't know if... That got across, but this product was originally designed as a low vision product. And I'll briefly tell the story. What it does is it allows an individual running a computer, especially somebody running around with a laptop, to have a 1 pound fold up like an umbrella CCTV with them. When I push the E, it started reading. I can also push the F for format, and when I push format, it suddenly changes instantaneously the screen to a magnified, high-contrast image where you can control the magnification. It looks on screen as if I'm running the ZoomText magnification program. I've got the options to control the magnification. And as I increase the magnification, where on a CCTV, the magnification extends beyond the screen boundaries, thus the XY table is required to move the document around, ZoomX word wraps everything. So there's no need to be moving the document around. The larger you make it, the more the word wrap. You can change selectable colors to your favorite foreground, background. And thus, you've got a camera with you that will function as a reading machine, a CCTV. What else am I missing on there?
Is this a better microphone?
Yeah, we're switching microphones, okay. The secondary camera that Zena mentioned is, they named it the Zoom Frog for some reason. And when you add it to the Zoom X, the product now becomes the Zoom Twix. If you add that second camera, which comes from the factory with the camera installed on the vertical upright, about halfway between the camera head and the extended legs, that camera is a rotating camera. So if you're a student in a classroom with one key, the F7 key, you switch from the ZoomX camera to the CCTV-style frog camera, and now you've got a distance viewing camera where you can bring in whatever in front of the room or in any distance. Sorry? Question? Or your neighbor's test paper, or... I got better things than that I can think of, but I'll leave that for a private conversation. go ahead, question?
Does the reading, when you put in the Zoom text part of it, does the reading part stop? Is it only visual?
No, you have an option. You can
doing
either
both at the same time.
Both at the same time, speech only or magnification only. That's your choice.
Okay, thank you.
You actually have a preview mode, which is controlled by the F5 key, that allows you to bring the full page image up at the document, and with a click of the mouse or motion with the arrow keys, you can actually tell it where on the document you'd like to start reading. By pushing the E key the way I did, that tells it to read the entire document. E is for entire. You could also push the, is it the T?
Yes,
for topic, which brings you to, it reads it in sections. So you can control what part of the document it is that you'd like to read. You know, that's a new feature.
I'm not sure.
I have no clue. That's one of the things the new version has that we haven't had a chance to play with. That's why we wanted her to do the demo.
Yes, I have a question. What is the camera megapixel on the camera?
Yang, 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 yang.
Good enough to do the work.
I don't have an answer for that. I'm sorry. We can try to find that out. Go ahead. Question?
Hi there. I was very interested in the Zoom X. In fact, I'm going to try and... I'm on my way to Braille Institute after this presentation is over, but I would like to find out how many voices are located on that machine, because I noticed the distinct male voice.
Okay.
Mark's going to answer that.
Okay, the voices are not limited. You install any voice that you want. Right now I have the slew of AT&T voices that actually came with JAWS 8, and I chose Tom for this, but we could have easily used Samantha, NeoSpeech Kate, NeoSpeech Paul, whichever voices you want. It's completely SAPI 5 compliant.
Okay, question down here. Microphone coming to you. One sec.
Hi. What is it? I take it then that this Zoom X requires a computer to work it. Can it work on? Am I correct on that, or can it work standalone in some way where you store an image and move it to your computer on an SD card or something like that?
Good question. Let me describe the configuration. I think Lena started with that a little bit. Maybe some of that got lost. The answer is yes. ZoomX is a PC-based product. It is not a standalone product. When you purchase ZoomX, in the box, you get the camera, whichever choice camera you made, either the ZoomX or the Zoom Twix. With it, you get a pouch to carry it in when you fold it up. You get the USB cable. It is a USB-connected device. It does not require external power. It draws its power from the computer. If you use the Zoom Twix version with the two cameras, it requires two USB ports. And again, there is no external power. If you want a device like this that's a standalone, the only one I'm aware of is the MyReader from Humanware, but that device does not have speech. So you have a magnifying product that captures a digital image and allows you to manipulate the text on screen in a variety of ways. This device is really designed for the PC user, and I look at it as the ideal product for a student, a business person, anyone who is mobile with their computer in particular, and I'll run on any computer that's got USB ports, but in particular, it's really exciting for somebody running around with a laptop, because if you do want your reader with you, this is more convenient than carrying most scanners. It reads much faster to you, and if you are partially sighted and need magnification, I really don't know of any CCTV that'll give you the kind of capability, reading capability, that this will allow you to turn your laptop into. Louis, you got a question?
Okay. I guess it's a two-part question. Part number one is, given that this is an interesting configuration of the tripod, is this designed so that we can always know how to position the paper? And how well does it do with paper that is got... Or let me rephrase the question. How does it handle text that is not exactly straight or diagonal? Or is it having a problem with the layout? Second question is, how easy is it to take the scanned image, convert it into a file, and import it into Word, Excel, or whatever application I need to use that piece of information?
Okay. I would say, first of all, we are running OCR here. So some of the characteristics that you are familiar with reading programs like Kurzweil and OpenBook, many of the characteristics are going to be similar in terms of how it handles the documents. Excuse me. My own experience in terms of scanning books, where you have the binding and text going down inside, is actually that it's extremely good. I think the camera positioning from above does a really good job of getting down right inside there. Skewing the page at an angle, I haven't seen any. I would say it's superior in my opinion.
One of the things I want to let you know is the design of the stand. The design of the stand allows the page to be nestled in the corner so that you always know that the paper is either perpendicular or parallel to the scanning bed of the camera, if you will. So it's in the design. That's why you see the legs go out the way they are. Now, if you folks are looking at an older, slightly older version of the camera that we passed around, there is little feet that actually lock the legs in place on the newer design. So you don't have to worry about that.
I'd also like to add to that in terms of the design. The camera, because of its flexibility and style, the question has come up, how sturdy is it? And I went right to Lena on it and asked her, and she said, you know, in not that I want to do this now, but she said that she is comfortable that if this thing is dropped, nothing's going to happen to it. I wouldn't drop it on a tile surface and try it, but on a carpeted surface, she's actually very confident in the stability. We've banged these things around, dragging them to shows. Sometimes we put them in our cases, sometimes we don't, and they really take a beating the way we go with them. And we have not had a camera go bad on us, so I'm feeling pretty good about that. The second part of Louis' question was about file conversion. You can save the document as a text file. So if you wanted to create Braille or do anything else with it, that option is there. There is a file menu, and you just go in and tell it to save the file. I'd also like to discuss one other feature that this has that's really exciting. Using a book, obviously a book is very a lengthy, laborious job. There is a book function in the software, and when you scan a book, and I know the other programs have batch scanning modes, but you saw how quickly this scans and captures the image. Not only does it happen with a book that you can turn the page and capture each page that quickly, there is a motion sensor built into the head of the camera. And when you go into the book mode and you turn that book mode on and tell it auto, it actually sees your turning of the page. So you don't even need to touch the button on the computer. You turn the page, it senses it, you hear it click, and it captures it, and you just keep turning the page. So just imagine scanning a 300-page book 2 to 3 seconds per page, and possibly faster, and how quickly you'll get through it. Then you save the book with whatever name you want to give it, and now you've got a book that is stored on your PC available for you to read it whenever you would like. Now, if the book is too large for both sides to fit, like on a paperback, it'll see both pages as columns like the other systems will. If the book is too large, what you can do is tell it that you're starting with page one. And each turn, because you're going to now skip a page, you don't have to keep moving the book. It will number them 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, and so on, right through to the end of the book. Then you go back, move the book, tell it you're starting with page 2. And now you go through it, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, and so on. At the end, you tell it done, collate, and it puts all in order for you. So that's a pretty impressive feature. Well, we look forward to that.
This is Christy, and my question is, and maybe I just got here, so maybe I missed, but can you use it with a Braille note?
In what way? To get the document onto the Braille note and read it?
Well, can you scan? Can you use it, like to put it on a PCMCIA card, or do you just have to do it, you only can use it for a computer? I don't know.
Yeah, if you can connect the Braille note to the PC.
Well, if you don't have a laptop and you only have a Braille note.
Negative. No, you've got to scan. The camera, the other thing I didn't tell you is included in the box with the camera is the ZoomX software. So there is ZoomX software that controls the process. When you plug the USB camera into the computer and start the application, it is running the ZoomX software, and that is the method in which you will capture the text. So it's not going to go out. You're not. The software is not Braille Note loadable, I guess. But you know what? That's a good point for me to bring up with Lena as a future possibility. Excellent. Yes, that's the second time I heard that.
Has it been tried on the Smalltalk Ultra, which I understand is a PDA, which is practically laptop power? So it sounds like it would work.
Yeah, I'm going to defer those questions. At this moment, it's a PC product, and we will investigate into the possibility. Before everybody gets anxious, let me answer the price questions. There are two prices. The ZoomX is $2,395. The Zoom Twix, adding the second camera, is $3,495. Which, I think is pretty reasonable when you look at what you're getting and what it would cost you in addition to your PC to accomplish the same tasks in a more efficient way or equally efficient way. Ed.
This is Ed Crespin. If you're totally blind, how accurate do you have to be making sure you put the material under the camera? Is it pretty easy, or are you going to have a really difficult time if you're totally blind or very low vision?
No, we haven't seen anybody. The legs, when you extend the legs, they form a right angle. And so you can just slide your page right underneath it. And you can rotate the pages as well. So I would say the answer is you should not have a problem. And as we briefly discussed before, the camera has a fairly good tolerance for pages not put under in a straight line.
if it's slightly skewed. Of course, if you turn it at a 45-degree angle, you may have a little problem there. But once you've got it down and put your hands on it and feel where your right angle is, I think it's pretty obvious how you put it, you know, put the document under the camera. Sure. Okay. I'll just put this document that's sitting here. This was Louis's email again. How you doing, Ken? All right. I'm in a document that was scanned before. I want to start up the camera, so I'm going to push the space bar.
Camera started.
So I'm telling the camera to start up, and now I want to read the document. I'm just going to touch the letter E.
Camera stopped. Technology and Rehabilitation Session Location Andy Kratter from Lewis Henner Wiharag Point Net sent Friday, October 19, 2007, 9:36 p.m. to Andy Kratter. Subject: Technology and Rehabilitation Session Location Hio Andy. Page: I advise only it took longer than expect to get the location information for the rehab.
I'm going to stop it there. So you can see just how quickly, and that's something we've seen for years. I mean, the other systems are great, but boy, how many times people have said, I just want to read this now quickly. That's such a high priority. What is this? I want to know. I want to read it quick. You got your computer on. You know exactly what you're reading in seconds. One thing I would like to touch on, because I have not gotten any time to play with the new version, I want to be fair to the system and honest with everybody. You've been familiar with reading systems that have been out there for many, many years and have had many, many years of development. This product has come a long way in a very short time, and one of the reasons Lena wanted to come out here and show this personally is because she has, and her son Leon, who is the prime programmer, and he's in Germany right now, They've made tremendous effort to provide speech access features that they recognize are really necessary to be a full reading system. When it first started, this was CSUN 2006, we first showed it, and it was just a low vision tool. Leon was in our booth, and he grabbed me to the side. We had a secondary laptop underneath, was Leon's laptop. And he said, you can't tell anybody about this. I don't know what I've done here, but tell me if this makes sense. And he pushed the button, and it started reading. I said something like, humana. Leon, do you know what you have here? And no. Well, you've just made something read very quickly that a lot of people with some additional capability and refinement can be a very exciting product. And ever since that moment, this has been a learning and growing experience for the folks at ABIC. I got a file that we printed out that, let me just go down the list, things that we haven't seen this product do before. Read next letter. You touch number 6 on the keypad. Read current letter. Number 5. Previous letter. Number 4. Read next word. Insert plus 6. Read current word. Insert plus 5. Read previous word. Insert plus 4. This goes on like that for sentence, start to end of a page and pause. Read from start to the cursor position. Read from cursor to end of page. Read from cursor to the end of the book, fast forward one sentence, fast backward one sentence, start stop camera, read next paragraph, read current paragraph, read previous paragraph. That all came out in this new version. In my experience of working with software, I have never seen a company do things as quickly as they do them in terms of response time when we ask for things. I can't tell you how long it's going to take for this product to have every feature that has been developed in Kurzweil, Open Book, and any other systems over 15, 20 years. But this thing is quickly becoming a very powerful tool that I think represents a new level in technology. Why not have something with an instantaneous capture rather than a flatbed scanner that's going to take 10, 15, 20 seconds. So I see this really as the future. We are just a few minutes away from 2 o'clock, and people for the next meeting are going to be coming in. Do we have any final
I have
questions?
One more question, and
yes.
that is one of the difficult things for people who have no vision is to fill out forms. Will this allow us to be able to capture what the form looks like and at least to be able to have some way of trying to fill out the form?
Not at this time, but it is on the list of things to do. I think that's a fairly complex upgrade, and I remember how long Kurzweil was talking about it before anything in that area came along. But that is something that hopefully will be there. Right now, it's a reading system. And even in the Zoom X, by the way, there is, for partially sighted folks, there is a live image that's available if you don't have the Zoom Twix camera. But because it's a digital camera, it's a slower, delayed image. But if you need live image while you're there, you also have it. Go ahead. No, sir. This is a PC product only at this time. I can't tell you if that's even on the list or not. Okay. Well, let me thank you for putting up with us under... Well, I can't tell you after what I've been through this week and this morning how good that makes me feel. We will have this system set up at our exhibit all day tomorrow and Saturday in the exhibit hall. Please come by and get a closer look, get your hands on it. We'd love to show it to you in more detail. Thank you again. Louis, question? Yeah.
How much horsepower does the Vesper require to run the software?
Any of today's laptops, any of Freak, any of 4, one of the 12 USB ports should be fine. The faster the computer, the faster the response time. So that's kind of general. This is a Pentium 4 that we're using right here. 1.8 gig of RAM. Very quick, very snappy.
Yeah, if you use a slow computer, I'm not going to guarantee it's going to speak to you as quickly as it just did. It may take a few more seconds. So if you're getting a new computer, if you're in the process of working, for example, with a Department of Rehab counselor and getting a computer with the newer computers, this is an ideal companion to have come along with it. So, okay, we're going to pack up and make room. Thank you much.
All right, guys. Now you guys know about Zoom X and this new... I need a new toy, so we're going to take donations to help Louis get a new toy, okay?
And we have Braille literature and print literature if anybody would like. Almost forgot about it.
Everybody hear this okay?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Have we got a way to make the stream talk loud?
That's another issue.
Okay, we'll get to... We've got some speakers, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we'll use the speakers.
Okay, I'm just going to keep going. I'm also not using my notes because I have my computer set up in the back of the table here. I was going to prompt myself with the notes, but I've done this presentation a few times, so hopefully I'll stay on track. So that's a little bit of the history of DAISY and NISO. So you want to hear the terminology when you're looking at players that you can play DAISY and NISO books. Now, what is in a DAISY or NISO book? There are a number of ways that libraries can produce these books. I talked about the markup that lets us navigate. But the NISO and DAISY standard also provide for the integration of electronic text with the digital audio. And you can produce a book in different permutations. You can have an audio-only book. That's what you get from RFB&D. You can have an electronic text-only book with no recorded audio. This is a NISO book of the type that's produced by Bookshare. And you can mix the two together so that you can have electronic text and the digital audio on the same media. It could be on the same CD or on the same flash card or whatever media the player needs it to be on. So if you have a DAISY or NISO book that's electronic text, then, of course, there's no recording. So you need a player that has a built-in computer voice, text-to-speech voice, that's able to reproduce the electronic text in a computer voice, like your screen readers do, for example. So the DAISY and NISO standards allow for any combination of these forms to be produced, and the richest form of DAISY or NISO book would be one that's full text and full audio on the same media and synchronized. By synchronized, we mean the player can jump from one mode to the other. So if I'm listening to a paragraph in recorded mode and the author, or the narrator, excuse me, says, and maybe he pronounces a name or a city or something that I'm not too sure of, and I say, well, I don't think he pronounced that right, I'd like to spell that word. Well, wouldn't it be nice if your player could switch over to the electronic text by pressing a key, and then you could navigate to that particular word and have the computer text-to-speech voice spell it out for you, so you actually know exactly what the word is. Or you could do a search in the text, for example, and find a particular name or something in the text that's of interest, and when you land there, you can switch back to the recorded mode and continue listening to the human narration at that point. So there's not a lot of books in the world produced in full text, full audio, but they do exist, and I do have one on the stream here, which I'll show you in a minute. And the important thing to understand is the Victor Reader Stream does have built-in text-to-speech voice, and therefore it is able to reproduce the electronic text in DAISY or NISO books that are text-only, like Bookshare. But it can also have the ability to switch back and forth between the recorded and the text-to-speech voice for those full-text, full-audio DAISY books that you might encounter. There are books out there, and you can rest assured that if your library or your book source is able to give you a full-text, full-audio book, and you have a Victor Reader Stream, then you have the ability to play that. So that's the history of DAISY NISO. Now, if you look at HumanWare, the Victor Reader line of products, we first became involved with the DAISY standard, producing a compatible DAISY CD player in 1999. That player was called the Victor Reader Pro. A very successful player for us, and the first commercial player that was had large volume sales in the DAISY world. And there are users out there almost 8 years later who are still using their Victor Reader Pro. It was a machine that was about 8 inches by 9 inches and about an inch thick with a CD tray on the front. It was a CD player. It had a telephone number pad to allow the navigation directly to the page, and it had the arrow keys that let you navigate through the book. The next player, the one that we've sold the most in the world and that is still going strong for us as a product, is called the Victor Reader Classic. And there are two versions of this, what we call the Classic and the Classic Plus. The Classic player has only four arrows in the middle of the keypad, and so the main navigation that you do is only to select the navigation level with the up and down arrow, so chapter, section, and page, and so on, and then use the left and right arrow in the four arrow cluster to move back and forth at the chosen level. The Victor Reader Classic Plus CD player is exactly the same player, but with the addition of the telephone number pad. And so the four arrow keys become the 2, 4, 6, and 8. We use the 2 and 8 keys as the up, down, and the 4 and 6 as the left, right on the Classic Plus. And so you do have the four arrow key navigation. But in addition, you have the direct navigation of go to page, typing in a page number, or even typing in a heading number. For books that don't have pages, we support what's called a go-to-heading feature, so that by typing go-to-heading 15, if headings represent chapters, then in this way you could land on chapter 15 with a direct navigation. We took the demand for DAISY CD players. I forgot to mention the Victor Reader Classic and Classic Plus are what we call a desktop player. So they're about... they have a handle on the side, or about an inch and a half thick, and about 8 inches by 9 inches rectangle. So a fairly large player, and they work very well for people in a desktop type environment, for elderly people that read leisure books at home and tend to keep the player in one place. But we had a lot of demand for a portable CD player that was in the early 2000s was much like you would find MP3 CD players. Students and professionals wanted a DAISY CD player in that kind of form factor or footprint. So we invented a couple of players. The first one was the Victor Reader Vibe, which has now been supplanted or replaced by what we call the Victor Reader Wave, If there's time to come up after, I have a classic and a wave on the table so you can see that history. We still sell the classic player and we still sell the wave player. The wave is like a commercial MP3 player. It's about 6 inches in diameter. It's circular, so it's just a little bit bigger than the actual CD, about an inch thick. It also has the number pad on the front, the flip-up clamshell type opening to put the CD in, and in that clamshell lid is a full telephone-style number pad. So we get all the advanced features of the go-to page, as well as the 2, 4, 6, 8 arrow keys for navigation. So that brings us to the invention of the Victor Reader Stream. Libraries and users as well told us to get ready for the next generation of DAISY players that would go beyond the CD. A couple of years ago, they told us, the libraries that is, that they wanted to start moving to download books in Europe and elsewhere. And they would not produce CDs forever. They wanted to have the ability to download, put the content on these new types of flash memory cards that were popular with the iPod and iRiver, Creative Labs, all those kinds of MP3 players. And so they wanted to have a DAISY compatible flash player to do this. And they wanted it to be portable, very small size, because of course we're removing the CD drive, so we can make it smaller. So out of those requirements, we started designing a couple of years ago and thinking about, we didn't have a name at that time, but it was the project was a portable MP3 DAISY MP3 and NISO player. We knew that we would be coming to the United States with this player, and that the digital service from NLS in their business plan was supposed to start in 2007, 2008. So we also thought about putting the capability for the NLS books on this player, and knowing that that would be of interest and certainly a requirement for the marketplace in the United States. So out of that, that's my cue to bring on the stream, I guess. So I'm going to do a little demonstration of the stream for you.
Jerry?
Yes?
I think we have a stream plugged in the back through the applications.
Okay.
So
let me put this down. And
on the table. I may turn it on to make sure it's really working.
Welcome to Victor Reader. Other books.
CNIB News.
File 3.07
Research.
Volume 9. Speed. Bookshelf, other books, speed, 1, tone.
Okay, the blind leading the blind. I think we're almost here.
Is the chair here with the microphone?
We're right there.
I got the stand set up.
Okay, I'm going to sit in this chair so I can...
Tone,
that
minus,
mic works as
1.
Well. This is the one you were using.
Text
okay,
files,
excellent.
2, books,
and
1.
Where's that patch
text
plug
for TTS text.
Screen.
He's right behind you.
Is this it?
He's got the screen.
Notes, 1,
yeah,
books.
Let's plug
it
in.
Here. Do you want to just use this?
Yeah, I put it in mine because
the cable's kind of short, so you may need to back up a little bit, and I'll move the microphone closer to you. And I can increase the volume.
Welcome to Victor Reader.
Okay, and this mic's working? Excellent. So this cord is kind of short. I can't pull it too far, but I think you can hear me okay? Okay, so the Victor Reader Stream, does everybody want me to do a short physical description? Has everybody had a chance to see or touch the stream, or do you want a quick physical description? Okay, so the Victor Reader Stream is about 4.5 inches long, 2.5 inches wide, and just under an inch thick. It weighs about 6 ounces with the battery in, so it would be equivalent to a little bit bigger than a pack of playing cards. On the front face of the player, we have the telephone number pad, like we do on the other Victor Reader players. So this player does include all of the capability of the desktop Classic Plus player. So with the addition of the text-to-speech voice and the voice recording, so it by far is the most advanced portable DAISY player that HumanWare has produced, the most advanced Victor Reader, and it's also the smallest. At the top left front face, there's a small external speaker, which I would say is not suitable for listening to talking books, but it is suitable to quickly check something on the player in those circumstances where you don't have time to get your headphones. You just want to make sure you've got the right SD card when you're on your way out the door to the bus and this sort of thing. It is, you can listen to the speaker comfortably if you're in a quiet room and 36 inches away, but this would not be a speaker that you'd put on the kitchen counter while you're making dinner. For that kind of application, you'd plug in an external speaker. So we market the player as a headphone player, that's for sure. On the top right face next to the speaker is a second grill. This is a built-in omnidirectional microphone for doing voice recording. So omnidirectional means it's suitable for listening all around the player, like if you wanted to record a lecture or a meeting. On the top edge of the player, we have three things of interest. In the center is what we call the slot for the SD, secure digital flash memory card. This is what you find in most of the portable digital cameras nowadays and also in MP3 players. The flash card is a postage stamp size card that nowadays can be purchased anywhere from about 256 megabytes up to 8 gigabytes. So these cards are taking enormous capacities. To the left of the SD card slot, and that card is removable, by the way, so in order to populate books or music onto the stream, you need to copy from your computer onto the SD flash memory card. So this player is very much a companion to the personal computer. It's meant for those people who collect books and music on their computer and they want to have a portable device to take the content away and play it. So this is there's no way to get content onto the player other than by using a computer. To transfer the content, you either remove the card from the player and put it into the computer if your computer is equipped with an SD card reader. If it's not, we supply a cable with the player in the box that will let you connect the player to the computer. And when this happens, the stream SD card will appear as a drive on your computer. So you have your C drive and you have your D drive probably for your CD. And if you plug in the stream, it'll most likely become your E drive. So the connection for the USB cable that makes this happen is just on the top edge to the left of the SD card. On the top edge to the right of the SD card, we have a connector for the AC power adapter so you can recharge the battery, and you can do that while the stream is playing if you like. You can use it while it's recharging. On the left edge of the player, we have the power button. Just below that, we have two little arrow keys pointing up or down, and those are to change volume, to change the variable speed playback, or to change the audio tone. On the right side of the player, we have a headphone connector on the top right, which currently is plugged into the audio of the room. Just below that, we have a second input for the recording. We have a microphone jack, so you can use a special purpose microphone if you want to do things like interviews and for podcasts or something like that, where you'd want to use a special purpose mic rather than the built-in one. Just below that, about halfway down the right-hand side, we have a record button, which is just a tiny bit recessed so that it makes it difficult to press accidentally. It's done that way on purpose so that you press the record when you really want to and not when you're just holding the player in your hand. I'm going to go through the key describer. The important thing to understand about the Victor Reader Stream is it is an accessible DAISY, MP3, and NISO player. So by accessibility, we mean that it's intended and built for blind and low vision people. All of the key presses are audible. All of the functions of the machine are audible. And the features, the different things that you can do, such as go to page function, will all speak as you press the keys. And not only that, but we pre-record all of those special messages and key presses in human voice just to make the player more comfortable. So you don't have the artificial voice unless you're playing the data, the book, and you have the human voice for all the key presses. If I remove the card, I've just done that now. I've pushed down on the SD card slot and the SD card pops out. And when you have no card in the player, we have what is called key describer mode. So in this mode, if I press the keys and there's no data present, the player will tell me what the keys are for. For example, if I press 5,
where am I? 5, no media.
And I've just lost the feed to the room. Yeah, my player is working, but it's not working on the feed.
Play, stop.
Oh, there we go. Okay, I'll try not. Okay, hold that cord there. Okay, so I pressed the 5. I'm in the key describer mode.
Where am I? 5.
And I press, I'll just press a few other keys to give you an idea of the key describer.
Scroll up, 2. Scroll down, 8.
Ooh, this is too much volume.
I'm going to turn it down.
Volume, 14.
I could have.
Volume, 11. Volume, 12.
Okay.
Move back, 4. Move forward, 6. Go to page. Bookmark. Bookshelf, 1. Delete, 3. Confirm. Play, stop, sleep.
Okay, I think you get the idea. I'm going to put the card in now because I want to get to some of the playback functionalities that I talked to in reference to Daisy. I'm going to push the card in.
Climbing the highest mountain.
Okay, so what's happened here is I've inserted the card. You heard a little chime to confirm that. And then the player immediately scanned the card and it realized that the last book I was playing was called Climb the Highest Mountain. And this is a DAISY sample book that was produced by the DAISY Consortium some years ago. It's kind of a nonsense book, but it's only 8 pages long. But I wanted to show it to you because it demonstrates all the advanced functions of the DAISY format. This is a full-text, full-audio book that I was talking about, and so we can demonstrate some of that functionality. If I press the play key...
This is simply a small introduction to the Norwegian mountains. For those who may be interested.
Producer.
So you heard the beginning of the human narration of this book, which is recorded, of course. If I press what we call the playback mode key, number 9.
Text-to-speech audio.
What's happened here is the Victor Reader Stream understands that this is a full-text, full-audio book, so it knows that there's electronic text available, and therefore it enables the number 9 key to toggle to the text. I just pressed the key, and you heard it announce text-to-speech mode. So if I now press the play...
Producer note.
About this digital talking book. 1. Chapter 1. The Norwegian Mountains. Chapter 1. The Norwegian Mountains.
So you see, I'm in exactly the same spot, that producer note that was about to be announced when I stopped the audio and I switched to text-to-speech. It continued right at that point in the text-to-speech mode. So I'm now listening to the actual text of the book. And I can navigate around in that text and listen to actual sentences or words, or indeed I can move down to character level and spell out words.
Page.
Hello.
Phrase. Line. Sentence. Word. Character.
I'm now at character mode. If I use the number 6 key,
M O U N,
I'm actually spelling out a word. If I now press the number 9 key again and go back to the recorded mode,
recorded audio,
and I press play,
Chapter 1, The Norwegian Mountains. Most people in the world do not pay.
The other thing I'll show you about an advanced DAISY book is what's called skippable elements. In the DAISY and NISO format, there's the notion of skippable elements, things like footnotes or sidebars, producer notes, you know, the producer notes where the narrator will say, a producer note on this page is a picture of the 1983 graduating class. There are 30 people, and in the back row we have John Smith and Jane Doe, and you say, well, gee, I don't want to listen to all that. So you're trying to fast forward and skip over that. In a DAISY book, there's the concept of skippable elements, so the book producer has the option of making a producer note a skippable element, and he can mark it this way inside the book, and a DAISY player that understands skippable elements can then either play those elements, so it can play the producer notes, play the footnotes, or the user at his option can configure the player to not play those. So it's something that's not prevalent in very many books, and is something that the stream can do if you have books that have this capability from the producer.
The proper attention to the mountains in Norway.
I'm going to go to the beginning of this
in
book
fact,
quickly.
Go to page, beginning of book.
Climbing the Highest Mountain.
Okay.
This is simply a small introduction to the Norwegian mountains for those who may be interested.
Producer note.
This digital talking book in the DAISY 202 font.
Okay, so we're now listening to the producer note. If you go to the number 7 key on the stream, which is the menu.
Menu, navigation and playback, loop, skip, all, play.
And I go to the skip menu, you can see that it's playing everything. If I arrow down.
Footnote, page number, producer note, play.
Producer note is set to play. If I change that to skip.
Skip.
And then confirm that.
Selected. Leaving menu.
And I go back to the beginning of the book.
Go to page. Beginning of book.
Climbing the highest mountain. This is simply a small introduction to the Norwegian mountains, for those who may be interested. Page 1, chapter 1, the Norwegian...
So you heard that we're now into chapter 1 and we skipped right over that producer note. So this is the kind of capability that's possible in Daisy and Nizo books. And the stream is capable of all of those advanced playback features. I'm going to close quickly, but I want to show you the bookshelf, which is the main constituent of the Victor Reader. If I press the number 1 key...
Bookshelf, talking books, 4, books, 1.
Climbing the highest mountain.
We see on this bookshelf called talking books, we have 4 books. The first one is what we've been listening to. If I press the 6 key, I can move through the other books.
2.
Journey to Independence. Blindness. The Canadian Story.
That's a CNIB History of Blindness in Canada. I recorded Daisy book with full text, full audio. The next one is...
3.
Call of the Wild.
That's a Bookshare book that's text only, and this one you would listen to with the built-in text-to-speech.
4.
Digital Audio Essentials.
Digital Audio Essentials is a O'Reilly book from Bookshare. This is another example of a text-only book. If I press the bookshelf key again, we can move to the next bookshelf.
Other books. 3. Books. 1.
Maestro.
So other books is where we put recorded books that are not structured. So they're non-DAISY books. They could be podcasts that you've downloaded. They could be recorded MP3 books that you've bought in a store. And they would go on to this bookshelf. The next bookshelf.
Music. 1. Book.
I'm going to open this bookshelf quickly. This is the music bookshelf.
Music. Folder. 1.
Jazz.
File. 1.
Oceanside MP3.
So you see, the advantage you have here is we tell you in human voice that you're in folder number 1 of your music, file number 1, and in the text-to-speech voice, we actually announce the name of the MP3 file, Oceanside.mp3, that's about to play. So you know exactly what you're playing and have the advantage of accessing all of your music and knowing exactly which folder and file you're in. It'll announce the artist name, the track name, and when you press the play button, you know exactly which track you're playing. The next bookshelf.
Bookshelf. Music. 1. Book. Text files. 4. Books. 1.
Human the text width. Files is where
company
you would
profile
put,
text.
This is where you would put TXT files or HTML files that you transfer from your computer, and these would all be spoken with the built-in text-to-speech voice. The first one was called HumanWare TXT. That's just a little text file with some background information about HumanWare. The next bookshelf.
Notes. 1. Book.
Is where you would do your voice recorded notes and then you would move to this bookshelf to play them back. We can record long notes by holding down, tapping if you like the record key and letting it go. And we can do a short up to 1 minute voice recording by pressing and holding the record key. So that very briefly covers the history of Daisy, the HumanWare players, and in more depth the Victor Reader stream. I think I'm out of time. Can we still take questions, or do we run out of time?
You got about 3 minutes.
When I read a book, I don't usually read it again. You know, I'm. So if I want to read something, can I delete it from the card?
Yes, absolutely. You think of the card as the media that you transfer from your computer to the card is what you want to play on the player. It certainly is likely to be a subset of all the information you have on your computer. And it typically will be a collection of books and music. And that's why we have the multiple bookshelves. When you're finished reading a book, it makes a lot of sense that you want to remove that from the SD card and replace it with another book. And in fact, we have a delete book function. If you're away from your computer, if you're on a one-week trip and you don't have your computer handy, and you've finished reading that newspaper or magazine and you don't want it to be in the bookshelf list anymore, then that would be a reason you'd want to delete it with the bookshelf from the bookshelf.
One more question.
Oh, okay. Yeah, two questions. Actually, what's going to be in the 1.1 update coming out the end of the month? And number two, when is it going to have a male voice available for reading text instead of the female voice?
Okay, I'll try and answer these quickly. First of all, the lady about the price, $329 in the U.S. And in terms of version 1.1, we're in final testing of this version. There's three main things that we want to release in version 1.1. The first one is access to audible.com books. And those will be the richest Audible experience you've ever had. We're going to bring you all of our MP3 functionality into Audible. This means you'll have the heading jumps that are in the Audible book. Remember, Audible is not a daisy book. It doesn't have very much markup. But they do have the concept of what they call the Audible heading. This will be available to you on the 2-8 key or on the go to heading key. So if you want to jump to heading 5 of the Audible book, you would type go to heading, type 5, and press play, and you would be there. We're also going to have the addition of a 1, 5, or 10-minute time jump to both MP3 books as well as Audible books. We will have the advanced, what we call the accelerated fast-forward feature that's now in the Daisy books on stream. Those will be extended to Audible books. Of course, we'll have the variable speed playback. Very difficult to find the variable speed on commercial players. So you'll have an Audible book player with variable speed. And, of course, you'll have the sleep timer that's part of the stream. So very rich reading experience for Audible books. The other thing we've done in version 1.1 is enhance the text navigation of text files. And we've provided the concept of a percent. So if you want to go to the halfway part of your file, you type go to percent, type in 50, and you will land in the middle of the file. We have that type of direct navigation. We've added fast forward for text files. And we've cleaned up some bugs related to text files. For example, right now in version 1, when you press a key and you're listening to a text book with the text-to-speech, it always stops playing if you try and raise or lower the volume. So this kind of thing will be gone. We fixed that and corrected a number of other bugs. So basically it's audible.com, significant improvements to text navigation and correction of a lot of the issues that we found with the version 1 release.
Jerry, this gentleman had his hand up for a while. I just want to squeeze in one quick one.
Thanks, Jerry. Wondering if the bookmarking features are available in non-DAISY files, such as text files or MP3 files.
Yes, available in text files, available in your audio notes, available in Audible books, available in MP3. Everything that the stream has can be bookmarked, including the meeting as you're recording it. So if you're recording a meeting and somebody says something that's really significant, you tap the bookmark key at that point, and when you listen to that recording later, you'll be able to jump to that bookmark.
Okay, guys. Well, thank you. Jerry, thank you very much for taking the time, and Kevin, thank you. It's wonderful. I learned more about the toy I like to play with. Never leave home without it now. Okay, guys. Well, thank you very much. We're going to take a quick break here, and before we get started, and I'll turn the floor over to Tricia Leeds, who is going to introduce our next speaker. So we'll give her some time to get up here, and don't go anywhere. You're going to learn about all sorts of interesting ways to go about what is the correct term to use?
What'd you say?
There's a term that I was thinking of that would describe basically what the topic is that
we're gonna do.
Is going to be covered.
Okay, well here it is. This is the rehab committee segment of today, and it's going to be very exciting. We're going to talk about impediments to employment that have to do with technology. So many of us want to be working out there, and yet technology can be one of our barriers. And we're going to talk about some of the problems, some of the solutions, and how we can come together and stay organized to fight some of the problems that we will continually have. And I do want to thank HumanWare. I know I'm stealing 10 minutes of their time because of the microphone problems, but they've been one of our one of the vendors out there that have really come together to work with us and really make great efforts to hear from all of you about what the issues are, and they really want to solve them. And I think they really need to be commended for that. We have a really special person in the room today, and she's a very important person. Her name is Catherine Bales. She's our new program manager at the Department of Rehabilitation, and I think we should all welcome her. She has 101 things to do, and she's chosen to be with us today. So, okay, we have an excellent speaker today. Her name is Jessie Lorenz. She is the Director of Public Policy and Information from the Lighthouse in San Francisco. If you've never heard Jessie speak before, she's really a treat to listen to. And you want to come on up, Jess?
So my name is Jessie Lorenz. I am the Director of Public Policy at the Lighthouse in San Francisco. I was born blind. I have two beautiful blue eyes, which are both prosthetic. I want to tell you about my first job. My first job was working at Wendy's. I was hired at Wendy's to make that's not why I was hired. I was hired at Wendy's to wash tables. Gotta tell ya, washing tables, pretty boring, as it happens. And it eventually, as I worked at Wendy's and was getting kind of bored with the table washing thing, I managed to convince the weekend manager to let me try making sandwiches. The weekday manager, his name was Keith, he didn't actually want me in the kitchen. He was a little worried that I would get in people's way or that I'd, you know, get burned by the deep fryer or the grill. Well, as time went by, Keith learned of my sandwich-making skill extraordinaire on the weekends, and he promoted me. I became the sandwich maker for both weekend and weekday evenings. I was so proud to have this job, and I was proud to have surpassed the expectations that people had placed upon me. I was even more proud to be making money of my own. I realized, however, that at Wendy's, the smartest people at Wendy's, maybe you don't know this, but I'm telling you a little secret. The smartest people at Wendy's are the order takers, the people who are working the cash register. I also began to discover that I might have also been one of the smartest people working at Wendy's. And so I decided that it was time for me to learn how to use the cash register. The cash register at Wendy's is a touchscreen, flat panel system. And in order to cater to the smartest people that are working at Wendy's, I hope we don't have any Wendy's people in here, the touchscreen has photographs on it as opposed to words. No matter how hard I tried to be a good order taker, I could not reliably take orders or deal with money from the public in a way that really, let's say, benefited the business. Eventually, both my ambition and my pride got the best of me, and I quit the job at Wendy's. I realized that without adequate technology, I had essentially hit the glass ceiling at Wendy's. Today, I want to talk about impediments to employment related to technology, and I'm going to start by taking a moment to talk about the state of the workforce. Then I'd like to talk about the future workplace, and finally, I want to talk about opportunities that we have to solve some of these things and how maybe we can tap into some solutions. According to the Department of Labor, by the age of 34, the average American has held 9 jobs. In the American workforce, there are currently 149 million individuals, one-third of whom change jobs each year. You still awake? Okay, good. Also, according to the Department of Labor, 80% of all jobs require the employee to be able to use a computer. By the year 2012, 1 million new jobs are thought to be created, and experts say that two-thirds of these 1 million new jobs will be technology-related. The American Foundation of the Blind says that under 40% of adults 18 to 55 who are blind are working. Sure indicates to me, folks, that in the blind community we have an employment crisis. In order to address that crisis, I think we need to start talking a little bit more about technology. The world is changing, and it's changing fast. Technology changes like almost as fast as the speed of light. It used to be, where jobs are changing as well. It used to be that employees worked hours that were rather inflexible. You worked a 9-to-5 work day, and you worked for the same company, maybe two companies, throughout your life. It's not how it is anymore. Employees are more and more often working flexible hours and are expected to be available to their employers when they're not in the brick-and-mortar establishment. You see technology in more venues in the workplace. People are able to work from home. People are using things like virtual private networks, web applications to store and save data, video conferencing services, and, of course, the CrackBerry. The CrackBerry is the BlackBerry, for those of you who don't know. How do people who are blind and visually impaired stay ahead of this technological curve in the workplace? Somebody once said that social change includes three prongs. You have your legislation, so you have your laws. The Americans with Disabilities Act is one example of a law. You have your court decisions, so the courts say that this, you know, the Brown versus Board of Education is a court decision. And then you have social attitudes. And it takes all three of those things to really bring about social change. I have a little conjecture here, and I think it's that third thing, folks, that we're having some trouble with. I don't know about you, but I know plenty of highly educated folks, lawyers, master's level individuals who have been looking for work indefinitely. I feel it makes me sad, actually, when I think about that. I think one of the barriers that people face once they do get a job is staying ahead of the curb technologically. If the employer is upgrading the email system or is upgrading any part of the IT component of a job, is that job going to continue to be accessible to the employee who is blind or visually impaired? I want to tell you about this guy I know. His name is Christian, and Christian works for the Marriott. He is a salesperson. Christian's employer gave everyone on the sales team a BlackBerry. Christian is visually impaired, and he couldn't use the BlackBerry made by RIM. So what he did, he decided to, he wanted to be just as competitive as the other sales folks. So he began an interactive, reasonable accommodation process with his employer to find a device that would allow him to check his email, remain in contact with clients while he wasn't at work. They purchased a phone. They purchased Talk software that this phone let him check his email. Christian had to change cell phone providers, and what they discovered was most of Christian's job is traveling around to the various Marriott ballrooms, several of which are underground, and he couldn't get cell phone service. So now he had a fix that didn't work for him when he was traveling about, you know, 45-50% of the time. So he went back to his employer, and he proposed that the Marriott purchase a more expensive device and that they put him back on the cell phone carrier with everyone else, all the other employees. Well, Marriott said, "I can't do that. It's too expensive. We have to get corporate approval." So Christian said, "You better get corporate approval." So the Marriott, that Christian's boss went to Marriott corporate division and got the approval to get the more expensive phone. And 13 months after the initial employees had been given BlackBerries, he was set up and good to go on his PDA phone. Lucky for Christian, he had a supervisor that was both sympathetic and supportive. That's not always the case. Many managers don't know what to do when faced with reasonable accommodation requests, and many people who are blind and visually impaired in the workplace don't have a grasp of all of the newest and neatest assistive technology devices. Often people go to rehab. I think the response from rehab in that situation may be spotty as well. Christian's a nice 26 case closure. Rehab, the rehab counselors that I have interacted with are wonderful people who are a little overworked. And I think in this case they might have said go back to your employer and work it out. I am all for engaging in the reasonable accommodation process and people knowing their rights. I think those are hard skills that people need to know and they need to have to be employed. I also think we haven't paid enough attention to some of the soft skills. I think Christian was successful in this instance because he had good relationships with people. He had a good relationship with his supervisor. He had developed relationships with the people who he worked with at the Marriott, and they were willing to go that extra mile for him. It's great to ask for a reasonable accommodation. Sometimes I think we forget to ask nicely. Last week, there was a gentleman who came into my office. He works for the school district, and he was very upset. I would say he crashed into my office because that's actually a more appropriate description for you. And he has a job with the school district. He had the forms for Department of Fair Employment and Housing with him. He wanted some help filling them out to file a complaint. And what it boiled down to when we started to talk was that he had been working for the school district and he had only been there for 2 weeks. The school district had Zoom text, a copy of it, but it hadn't been installed on his computer. The HR office was not responsive. This gentleman's supervisor was on vacation. There was also some lighting that he needed installed in his workstation. So he had been spending his days at a new job as a newly employed, fairly newly blinded person, looking incompetent and not being able to be productive. And he was ready to write a Department of Fair Employment and Housing complaint on his employer, which, who can't understand the frustration in that? Sitting in a new job and not feeling like you're competent. I remember I worked for the Mayor's Office on Disability for a while, and I was astonished that in the ADA compliance office in the city, getting my computer to speak to me was quite a process. Who has authorization to take the license off the server and, you know, who knows how to install it and what, you know, IT department supports this department, blah, blah, blah. I mean, this type of entanglement and this type of waiting, I think, is more common than we like to think. And what it means is that people are sitting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. I think the Department of Rehabilitation often can help. I think people are still waiting and waiting and waiting and not being productive. I think sometimes the department wants to enforce the ADA and says, go back to the employer. I think a systems change we might want to think about is at least getting the person the technology they need to do their job so that they can hit the ground running. You know, we were talking about the attitudes of people, about blind people. Sitting around for 6 weeks, not being able to be productive, doesn't help change those hearts and minds about blind people. I have some thoughts about things that need to be addressed. I don't know if you noticed, but I'm sort of opinionated. I think one avenue that a group like CCB could potentially make a great deal of difference around is working with HR managers. HR managers often don't realize that simple things, when it comes to the application process or employee testing, simple things can be done to make those processes accessible to people who are blind. Even something real basic, like make sure that you have forms that are emailable to people. Allow people to take things home to fill them out. Work with HR managers to develop clear policies and procedures for reasonable accommodation requests. Another area I think that the community could have an impact around has to do with vendors and buy it before you try it. Regardless of who's purchasing the technology, these products are really expensive. And if you're going to shell out $2,000, $4,000, you'd like to know it's going to work first. And I know some vendors are pretty good about that. Others are quite reluctant. Another recommendation in terms of systems change. What if the screen reader and the screen magnification program followed the person? What if every time I change jobs, I get to take the same screen reader with me? I don't have to have an employer buy it new for me every time. I think that could make a really significant difference. I think one of the challenges we have as folks who are working and who are blind is constantly having to remain vigilant. I work at the Lighthouse, which is an agency that serves blind people, and we have lots of blind people on staff. And we were going to upgrade to Microsoft Outlook 2007. Luckily, we didn't do that. As many of you may know, Outlook 2007, the calendaring feature, was not working very well with JAWS 8. I think that there have been some work has been done around that with Brian Hargen and Freedom Scientific, and it works a little bit better now. But without us blind employees remaining vigilant to changes like that and the impact that they would have on our ability to access the workplace, that kind of upgrade could really impact our ability to do our jobs with the same level of productivity. I want to leave you with a quote from Margaret Mead before we move into the panel presentation. She said, "Never doubt that a small group of committed people can accomplish something great." In fact, that's the only type of... I'm screwing up the quote. Let me try it again. Margaret Mead said, "Never doubt the good work that a small group of committed individuals can do." I think I've given you some food for thought. Our panelists, Donna Pomerantz and Ken Metz, are going to speak about some of their experiences. And I hope that we can actually have a discussion about how to make things better and how to stop the employment crisis that exists in our community. Thank you, and I'd like to ask Donna and Ken to come forward. So as they come forward, I will try to introduce them and do justice with the introductions. Ken Metz works at the Foundation for the Junior Blind. He has worked as a rehabilitation counselor. Donna Pomerantz has a long history of systems change activities. I know many of you read Donna's articles in the Braille Forum. Hello, guys. There's a table here. All right, so I'm going to just jump right into questions. Are you guys ready? So I'd like to ask each of you to tell us about jobs that you've held and the types of technology you've used to do those jobs.
Go ahead.
Ladies first.
Yeah, that's what I was telling.
That's exactly what he was telling me. I was giving him the mic, and he. What types of jobs I've held? I've been a preschool teacher. I've been an alternate media specialist at a community college. I've done crisis intervention counseling in elementary school levels. And I've been a systems change advocate at an independent living center. And the technologies, type of technology, I've used computer technology with JAWS and screen magnification and scan read software and something as simple as a Xerox machine when I was, you know, doing preschool teaching. So, you know, that's been me. Here's Ken.
Actually, I come from the era of BC, before computers. And I be nice, Luke. I did start out with a couple of small jobs when I was even 15, like going door to door selling things, which didn't take much technology other than, actually, I will say it did take some technology, good mobility skills even at that age. And in those days, that was technology for us, especially at that age. And so I did go door-to-door selling stuff. But then finally when I, and I did some other things in between, but my first main job was with Pacific Bell, and that was a very tough one because there was no real technology out there. They found something that would allow a call to come in and for me to hear it, and I was doing a special operator job just because it clicked a certain way, and that was the technology they found. And Sunday, when we have hours, I could tell you stories about even trying to get into the phone company at first. After that, I found my own technology. There was a little device, which we all know now called a light probe, first developed in England. And it was a little cone-shaped thing, and I ended up working the official Pacific Telephone and Telegraph in those days, PBX board, by constantly moving this device across this like 4-foot panel of lights all day. And I would plug into the calls when the light came on. It would be an intermittent beep. I could hear it on this light probe, and I knew exactly where to plug the cord into. Those were fun too, especially when it rained. If you were a little wet and you plugged this metal cord or you touched it, every so often you had an extra tone along with the light sound. after that, I did get a job in a clerical position, and that's when I finally started with some of the real technology as we know it. That was the Opticon. And the Opticon was really a lifesaver because I was able to read certain things with it. I wasn't super fast at it. Some people were, but I was able to be fast enough to at least look at things that I had to type up, and I mean, again, on a typewriter, no computer. And finally I got it was the Opticon lens that you hooked up to the electric typewriter so that you could tell what you were trying to read or where you were. This was really, you know, incredible technology for its day. Then I finally ended up getting trained. The phone company thought I was doing an adequate enough job, and I had a great boss at that time, a wonderful supervisor who said, you know, Ken, I've heard about all these talking things, and we're going to get some stuff here so that you can get trained on the computer. And that's where I got my first training. It was 1985 Enhanced PC Talk, a guy named Ron Hutchinson in Ohio, and that was what made the first computer that I had, IBM XT, 10 megabyte hard drive. try that one today. And so I did get some training, and even then when he heard about the first scanner device, he rented it for a couple of months so I could try it out to see if it would work. And it was haphazard, but it did work to some extent. And finally, as the technology got better, I was fortunate then to get a Braille display at work, along with one of the, and it was one of the Navigator 80 Braille displays that weighed about 40 pounds, I guess, 30, 40 pounds, and the old big, huge Dectalk box that weighed about 25 pounds. And so, yeah, so, you know, it's interesting today to just carry this stuff around. And so it's helped me. And then finally I went to become a travel agent. And even there I carried this big Dectalk, but the Navigator with me to show the boss how the Braille display would work. Let me turn that off. There we go. Showed the boss how the Braille display would work. I took it on two buses to get to the agency and carry this thing with me. So, in essence, yes, I've used a lot of technology and even more today, and yet today it just seems like we expect the technology.
I think it's interesting that your manager is who introduced you to some of the talking products when they first came out. I think you can't underestimate having a good relationship with your supervisor. So talk to me a little bit about technology. And has technology ever kept either of you from getting a job or from being promoted in a job?
I would say that both. And the barrier is has been basically not necessarily, you know, not being able to get the assistive technology. The barrier was inaccessible web environments or databases or things like that. So, you know, it has been a barrier at times.
I'm not understanding. The Bay Area?
Barrier.
Oh, the barrier. The barrier. I'm sorry about that.
Barrier. Yeah, it's been a barrier. It's you know, inaccessible databases and web environments and, you know, things like that, or forms that, you know, that are used, you know, that that are not accessible to the screen readers or magnifiers, things like that, that are used on a regular basis. That's definitely been more of a barrier than actually not being able to acquire the assistive technology. So,
and I would say, yes, it has been. When I went to work, for instance, for the phone company, because the technology wasn't there, everyone that had a college degree, even a bachelor's, went into the company directly into management. It took me probably 8-9 years to get into management. And it was because of that. And there were jobs I could have done even with the existing technology, as little as it was. But that, you know, because I couldn't read print at that time until after the Opticon came out, or until I had it and learned how to use it. Yeah, it was a barrier. Surprisingly enough, some of the places where I think technology still is a little bit of a barrier are more so, I don't know if I should say it, but I will, but it's more so the agencies for the blind who don't provide the type of technology or don't consider the type of technology that's required. They don't keep up to date on it. The things you do, everything is done for the administrative or the sighted members without determining how do I make this this template accessible. How do I make, and the point is, the technology is there. They just don't think about it. Or, oh, you have to go through our IT guy in order to even upgrade JAWS. You can't upgrade it unless he approves. Not he will, but the point is, you can't just go ahead and, even if you have an SMA, before you install it, you have to get approval from us to, well, sometimes some of this gets a little ridiculous because we're using the programs anyhow. And it's just an update. So, yeah, there are times where we get behind, sometimes by a week or two, sometimes by a year or two.
And it's interesting to me always, like, how do we expect mainstream employers to get it right if we can't keep our own house clean? Can you talk about what you see? You've talked about some of the barriers that you've experienced, but I'd like each of you to talk a little bit more globally about some of the barriers you think blind and visually impaired workers face and whether or not you have suggestions about how we could address them.
Okay, I'm going to go first this time. One out of three, I can go first. this is a rehab committee, so I'm going to say a lot of it is really put on the head of the rehab counselors. I think individuals that are being sent to different programs to learn how to use technology and stuff, and they're still told, well, we can't get you this equipment until you have passed these classes, until you do this, until you do that. It's the most ridiculous thing I've heard, because how do you expect the person to excel in it if they can't use it or practice it when they're either in class or once they've completed the class? By the time they get the equipment, they have forgotten it. Now, at the same time, since I have been a rehab counselor, I know people who will come to you and they want the world, and that's not the point. We don't, this is not, to me, it should not really be a complete entitlement program. I don't think that's what it's all about. If you as rehab counselors have some folks that you really believe are flaky, I wouldn't get it for them either. But I've seen many good people turned away from getting the equipment they need that would motivate them to learn it better and better and better, and then to go out there and get the job and be prepared to get that job and be prepared to start within 2 weeks or a month instead of 6 months when they end up losing the job half the time. So I do say a big part of it is going to be based on how the rehab counselors end up following up on the requests of their clients. I think the once there's some proof that you've done very well in your classes, I really believe that it is going to be up to rehab. Everyone says, well, you guys can pay for the stuff and this and that. Well, you don't use a car and it doesn't cost you for this. Whoever says that doesn't have to pay for readers, doesn't have to pay for transportation. Yeah, we could say access because it's a little cheaper, but access is not the wherewithal. You have to plan well in advance where somebody else doesn't. So it's very costly to be blind, and yet not as costly, as far as I'm concerned, as someone who has to get an accessible van. So my point is, you have to take each case individually, but don't just deny a client the opportunity to get the technology they need that will actually make them work and make it a useful type of employment. I'm not saying just get every bit of technology that's out there, but get the stuff they really need to be productive. And while they're going to school and they're learning, keep them motivated so they don't go back to the SSI and stuff and say that, hey, this is fine for me. I think we need to make sure these people, when they're motivated, continue to go in a positive direction. So rehab counselors, you guys have to counsel your clients. And you also have to look at it, you also have to look at it from the point of, even if you were a counselor for 40 years and you didn't have technology going through school, I didn't either. I did use a slate and stylus. But you know what? There's technology out there, and people don't use pens and pencils very much anymore either. They use PDAs. So treat us equally.
And I guess both slate and stylus. And I guess what I would say is attitudes, are a definite barrier. Ken basically talked about the manifestations of those attitudes in what he stated. I also believe that, work ethic is also a barrier on all sides. There is a lot of the, folks that do get the technology that they need, there's not enough training to properly work with people to teach them how to use that technology to its fullest capacity. Everyone has a book and they want to go by it, but, everyone learns differently. And, I believe that more training needs to be done, because counselors will say, well, we get them this. They don't use it. They end up dropping out. Well, why do they drop out? Well, folks, because it's become a barrier. There is no training. There needs to be more training. That's one of the things that I hear more and more. So that's definitely one of the issues there as well. So thanks.
I would like to open this up into more of a discussion.
Okay. I'm Louis Herrera, and I worked in aerospace for close to 20 years. I've been involved with computers since 1977. I'm not that old, but I'm one of those people that just couldn't stay away from technology. Anyhow, my comment is this. You know, I've always heard, and I'm not picking on any rehab counselor in particular, but I've always heard this thing about, you must learn JAWS, you must learn this, you must learn that. As an engineer, I'm almost totally blind. I was already more than 50% blind when I went to work in aerospace. I started out as an experimental employee, but I ended up doing more than the average. I worked in the engineering field, working assembling, doing programming, doing whatever it had to do with computer technology, behind-the-scenes support for the people that built the rockets and all that good stuff. I find that, you know, trying to make a program like JAWS the de facto standard is a limiting standard because there's other tools out there. I use JAWS, I use WindowEyes, I use Dolphin. Yes, I am not in a situation where I can get, you know, JAWS or these products are going to be available to everybody. However, I'm a firm believer that if you want something and you want to continue to be independent, you can put away your pennies. Eventually, they'll add up to an amount that you can use to buy these products. I happen to find that there are certain applications that JAWS is good for, and there are some that WindowEyes and the others are for are better. And I would hope that people would be more proactive and or councils would be more proactive in giving the opportunity to get some of these tools to really open up other opportunities to the potential.
I really appreciate your insights, but can we have a question? Just to keep the conversation moving.
My name is Roxanne Stallings, and I have a question for Ken. I find your comments interesting about the entitlement of people wanting to have equipment in order to go to school. So my question is, do the rehab counselors have an adequate means of giving out equipment on a lender or conditional basis so that the people have to prove that they're capable of doing the things that they want to do and have the technology assistance for it and then recycle the equipment?
Ken, do you want me to answer that? Zed Crespin.
You know, actually, from what I recall during that time, no, there was no lender policy. I had been, before I left rehab to go, by the way, Jesse, it's Junior Blind of America, so I don't get in trouble. They changed the name from Foundation. But we still like Foundation, those of us who are old pros from the 60s. to answer your question, though, Roxanne, yeah, it's interesting. There was no lender program. Before I left rehab, I was on a best practices committee. And I'd fly up to Sacramento once in a while from down here, and we'd talk exactly about having the state getting some equipment that they could loan out. It never materialized, but there are lots of things that never materialized with the department, including some job development. And so, you know, that could have been the wherewithal. And as much as they think it costs a lot of money to have job developers and stuff, I think they could really save money in the long run. But at the same time, I want to say the one part, though, that's not technological, but it has to be heard, is that the students themselves or the folks who want to go to work also have their parts to do in making sure that they have decent social skills and making sure that they know how to get along with sighted people, and not saying that sighted people are the blame for everything. You can't do that either. You can't have it both ways. And you don't bite the hand that feeds you, as my dog would say. So therefore, you know, it is a two-way street. I don't want to just say the counselors are doing something or not doing enough. And I do feel they can do a lot more. They do need to know their clients better. And part of it is the system, just because of all the paperwork that's involved. You don't have the time to really be the counselor that you need to be. But when it comes to the technology, I think once we know that people are getting some of the training, yeah, we have to advance that type of equipment. And you're right. If it were on a lending program, I think there would be a lot more involved as far as their learning skills, their learning the technology, and then finally getting their own equipment. But they need to have that equipment when that job offer is made, not 6 months later.
Do we have other questions?
I think there are. This is Christy Crespin. I think there are plenty of us in a situation. I know I'm not the only one. where your employer develops forms, develops interactive systems. As a state worker, I have been involved with the union. I've been involved with asking over and over again for reasonable accommodation for when they're developing the forms to please, you know, consider accessibility issues. I've given them resources, and what I'm getting out of it is nothing. And Donna, what would you do in this circumstance?
Well, and it's definitely a difficult situation that I've been in. One of the things that has kept me sane, I guess, is Roger. Yeah. You definitely need to keep your paper trail, and you definitely need to document. And it gets extremely frustrating because unless you have someone at a high level hearing what it is that you have to say, a lot of times things change overnight, and one day you'll go to your computer and what used to work isn't going to work because IT changed it. And what I would do is work it through all angles in the system. And again, unfortunately, I believe it needs to be worked from the inside and the outside. You definitely need to find a way to be able to do that, whatever way it is. And ultimately, as I said, you document, and ultimately, if it is applicable, I think that a Section 508 complaint may be in order, because this is a state entity. And everything electronic and information technology, there's no excuse for the things that are brand new, that are newly created, not to be accessible. That's definitely what I would do and actually have done to a certain degree. So, and I feel your pain, believe me.
And I think sometimes, Christy, there are avenues we can have with ADA complaints and all, and I think part of it is, do you want to go through the state fair housing employment? Do you want to go through EEOC? Do you want to go through that hassle? And sometimes you have to really weigh the situation to determine if it's worth all that. How long do you want to be there? Do you want to transfer? And even if you win the case, how comfortable are you after? And I'm not saying don't do anything like that, but unfortunately, we're put under that type of pressure, and it is pressure that, you know.
Which is what I meant by you need to work it from the inside and the outside, and you need to weigh the whole system, and you need to weigh all your pros and cons, because and that's what I said, yeah, to keep absolutely. Your sanity. But you've got to work it from all the way around, and you may need people to assist you, because I know there are other people in that system. And a lot of times it's easier to stand if you're not standing by yourself. And again, you need to work it from all angles, from the outside and from the inside.
Can I have, instead of a show of hands, can we have a clap of hands for those in this room who, like Christy, have been in situations where the employer upgrades technology and then you're unable to use it? So you're not alone. Actually, and one of the great things about CCB is that we can draw strength from one another. You can do your work from the inside, and we can also do work from the outside to try to make it better. And that is a great segue. That is a great segue. I don't want to go over. I want to respect people's time, and so unless I get Tricia to give me a nod to go over, I'm going to try to wrap us up. Okay. Catherine Bales is here from the Department of Rehabilitation. And so I'm going to let her respond to all of the things that she's heard today.
Do you want to walk around with this?
Yeah. Can we have a hand for Ken and Donna as they're walking away?
Okay, good afternoon, and I am so happy to be here. And let me know if this mic is in the right place or not. And okay, we'll try our best. I'm going to try to walk around a little bit. I have absolutely heard some of your concerns about technology. Believe me, I've got those same concerns. This morning I spent 2 hours trying to get connected to our system, working at the Norwalk office, and trying to figure out why isn't this working, and finally got it to work. So technology, I don't care what your position is. I happen to be the program manager, and I have my problems as well. We all do. But I want you to know that I support technology. Assistive technology, there I go, really has helped to level the playing field. That's really not a cliche. It's absolutely true. It's allowed us, when I saw some of the DAISY today and the other technologies that have been displayed, I mean, really, things are advancing. I'm back to where, from the ages of, Ken Metz, and I go back to the same era. And I remember my talking books and what kind of large cassette they came in and how it used to be. And I'm thrilled every time new technology comes around. I'm trying to find out ways to use it, and is this going to really be right for me? And I had a CCTV that I thought was going to be just right for me. I had it in my office, and I'm sorry, after a while, it became real evident this just wasn't the right one for me. And now I've got a new one. But it took a long time for that process to get to where it is right now, where I've got it working. So I understand it's important. We talked about the soft skills. Oh, my goodness. I talk about that all the time, the soft skills that we need to have as employees, that we need to have when we're working with our supervisors, with our coworkers, and so all of you, as you go into the workplace, as you're already there, you know, developing those relationships are so very, very important. Learning to communicate with your supervisor in that assertive way, not that aggressive way. And I thought I learned that too. Although I think when I called the help desk today, I was feeling a little aggressive. I had to hold it back. When Mark got on the phone, I went, "Mark, I got problems." So the soft skills are important, how we learn to communicate, how we try to do that as effectively as possible, always. And always, that's important. And then for those of you who are consumers, we're happy to have you here. For those of you that are consumers, you know, work closely with your counselor. No, rehab is not an entitlement program and all of that, and you've heard that before. But we are here to help our consumers go to work. That's what we want to do. And assistive technology, I feel, is needed as early as possible. Do you need everything? No. Do you need the right pieces of equipment to help you with your training and then as you go to work? Yes. And you know what? It's so different for each person. Every single consumer has different needs, has different goals, and that's why you as a consumer need to work closely with your counselor. Communicate effectively, just like you would in the workplace. Talk about what your needs are. What are your goals? What do you already have? What's working? What isn't working? that's how we start to narrow it down. What's good for you? And I fully support. I support our counselors in trying to get the technology that's right for the consumers. We can't get it all. We can't. We all would like it all, wouldn't we? My husband, I'm sure, is saying, well, in fact, my CCTV just broke this past month that I'd had for 15 years. Okay, so I had it for 15 years. But my husband doesn't realize, he's fully sighted, that 15 years is really a long time for a CCTV. So when I'm saying, I need a new CCTV, he goes, what do you mean? You just got that. No, I didn't just get that. You don't understand. You get to drive a car. And so I went through that whole bit. He was not that excited with me. Well, it's 10. And he thinks he's going to get another a few thousand out of it, too. 180,000. That's just the way he is. Yeah, it's a guy thing. Anyway, I'm not going there. Anyway, I support you guys. I want to do what I can. We have our regulations. The other thing is, you know what? One of the reasons why we can't get it all for everyone, we have to look at what's really necessary, what's essential for training, for going to work. We've got a lot of people we want to serve. We just do. And we want to serve as many as we possibly can. So that's why we need to use good judgment. Judgment is an important quality that we all want to have. So we do need to have good judgment as we make those decisions. You know what? Do we want to turn it over to questions at all? Or can I have Jesse come up and talk about a new program that we have? That's what I'm thinking. Okay. And then, you know what? If you have questions for me, I'm going to stick around a little while. Come find me, and I would love to talk with you, okay? Okay.
I just want to let you all know, as a rehab counselor at the Department of Rehabilitation, Catherine has been a great asset to me as a counselor, being able to help people. So I really thank her very much.
Okay.
Because we're going to conclude real quick, I'm just going to say one thing we want to do is carry on this, because it's an ongoing issue for everybody around how do we stay employed and deal with all our technology issues. We just set a date, me and Jesse, for November 9th at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'll go over to the Lighthouse and be with Jesse, and we would like to get people on a conference call. We can continue the discussion and just chip away at these barriers, because I think we need to all stick together on them. So write that date down, November 9th at 2 o'clock, or 1 o'clock, right, Jess? It's a Friday. Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, you want to say something? Yes, yeah. Okay. Jesse, can you come up? Okay. I just want you to, one of the programs that we have for Department of Rehab and for our consumers is a new program that I'm going to have Jesse talk about for just a couple minutes, because I really want her to let you know about it, and we want to encourage people that live up in the Bay Area to participate in it. So it's about medical transcription training. And I was a medical transcriptionist way back when. Okay.
Thanks. That's a great introduction, actually. So the Lighthouse of San Francisco is partnering with the Lighthouse of Houston. The Lighthouse of Houston has been offering medical transcription training for over 35 years. They have, and this is pretty an incredible number, they have a 100% job placement rate. We are going to be working with the Lighthouse of Houston to offer medical transcription training to students in the Bay Area. Our first class starts January 7th. We're still looking for students to be part of this class. I have lots and lots of CDs here that give more information about the program. A couple really key things for you to know. The starting rate for the medical transcriptionist in this program is $14.40. You will, after, it's a 3-semester training course that is 18 months long. During the third semester, you'll start getting paid. There's actually on-the-job training available. The Department of Rehab will pay your tuition for the course. It's $750 a month. Books for the course are $1,700.
I want to be quick and let you guys get out of here. But I don't know about you, but one of the things that I was thinking when I first heard of this program is medical transcription really a viable career for people anymore? And what we found, we actually hired a consultant to explore that, is not only is it viable, but it is growing. We have a contract with the Naval Hospital down in Southern California. So the people that complete our course will be doing medical transcription for that hospital. An interesting thing about government work, it cannot be outsourced, so it's outsourced to different countries, so it's a perfect opportunity for blind folks to take advantage of some real sustainable work. If you're interested, contact the Lighthouse. I'd love to give out these CDs because I don't really want to take them back with me in my suitcase.
Oh, good.
And you guys have been wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Okay, guys. Well, it's 4 o'clock. Any parting comments, Tricia, or... are we finished? I guess we are finished now.